All right, you're listening to the BJ Murphy Show. We got Amadou Massali, who's the CEO of Famboutique, and he's based in Dallas. We're going to be talking about the Gullah Geechee culture, the Black Seminoles, and connections to Africa and Sierra Leone. I'm fascinated by this, and we're going to have a good conversation. How you doing, brother Amadou?
I am doing well, sir. How are you doing this morning, this afternoon?
Yes, sir. I am doing fantastic. I'm looking forward to this conversation, because this is a part of my heritage, because my grandparents are from Plantersville, South Carolina. Mm. And I didn't ask a lot of questions when I was growing up, but I know when we used to go down there, everybody was talking about, you know, his name was Ed Gethers, right? I don't know if you know that name. That Gethers name is very powerful down there in that part of South Carolina, the Low Country. And he used to like to eat rice all the time. Every meal had to be with rice. And I know that's part of that culture, right?
That's right. Big part of it. Big part of it.
So what is Gullah?
Just the other day, I was explaining to someone about Gullah and Geechee. There are two theories out there. And one of them, Sierra Leone has two ethnic groups or tribes known as the Gullah people, G-O-L-A. And we also have the Kisi people or Gizi people, which is G-I-S-S-I. So there is one school of thought that thinks both of these names, Gullah and Geechee, comes from these two Sierra Leonean tribes, Gullah and Gizi people of Sierra Leone. See how Gullah sounds to Gullah and Gizi sounds to Geechee. But there is another school of thought. This one speaks to the Gullah people, because in South Carolina, there was a time when they were referred to those coming from Angola and maybe Congo as Gullah people, to distinguish them from those on the rice coast who they referred to as the Guinea people. Mm. So in South Carolina, there were terms like Gullah to refer to the non-rice-speaking Africans and Guinea people referring to the rice-speaking coast. And I'll talk about what that coast is right now. It encompasses Senegal from the north, and then the Gambia coming down south into Guinea-Bissau, Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia.
Wow.
Now, that region, we've had people growing rice for eons and were experts at it. In fact, during the transatlantic slave trade, once America, plantation owners in South Carolina, and 60 years later, Georgia, realized that they could get skilled Africans from this rice coast, they negotiated to pay a premium for these rice cultivating skilled Africans. Yes.
Wow.
Basically, your question was regard to Gullah and Geechee, where those words may have come from. But even more importantly is how did they become Gullahs and Geechees?
Our people came in through the South Carolina coast. So when we came over, let's start from the root. Like when we came over here, a lot of Black people don't equate us not having our own names. They don't equate us having our own religion, our own, you know, culture and everything that we came over to the shores of South Carolina. And then we were made into another type people. But from what I understand, the Gullah and the Geechee were the warriors, the fierce people who rebelled against them totally changing and doing away with the history of themselves. Am I correct?
Yes. I think what you're trying to say is that they have maintained more of their African history, culture, or language than any other group, not just in North America, but I think in the Western Hemisphere, if you will.
Wow.
Yes, these guys have been, and there's a reason for that. We'll get into that. But there was a reason why it happened in Georgia and South Carolina, for example, and it didn't happen in Virginia, where actually there were more Africans taken to this colony of Virginia than were taken to South Carolina or Georgia.
Yes.
Yeah.
So why has this been so hidden from us in plain sight about the Gullah Geechee culture, which is so rich and strong, you know?
Yes. Well, I think there are, multiple reasons, or at least a few reasons why that is. Number one, there is an obvious effort to take away these narratives and act like they never existed in the first place by people. And then also the Gullah Geechee culture back in the days, people didn't want to identify as Gullah Geechee themselves. Ooh. You know, they didn't want to be, because it was like Geechee was known as a derogatory term, yes, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they used to refer to them rice eating mm-hmm. Geechees. And I think that also played a role into why we have not heard enough about these stories, these narratives. But we're about to change that. And that's part of the reason why I'm sitting here with you talking about, you know, my history, which is part of your history. And it's time to do this.
Yeah, my grandfather was a rice-eating man, though. He had rice with every meal.
Yeah, oh, wow. 3 times a day we used to eat rice in cereal. I mean, so people still do rice for breakfast. It'll probably be in a porridge form, you know, with sugar or honey. Rice for lunch, rice for dinner.
Wow. So tell me how you came into the knowledge of your ancestry and your fascination with finding out where you came from.
Well, for me, I knew I came from Sierra Leone, right? At least I was born and raised there before I came over here to study. But what happened to me was that I went down to Columbia, South Carolina, to watch a sneak preview of Skip Gates' African American Lives.
Okay.
It was coming about, I think, a month later. So in January of 2006, I went down to Columbia with 3 of my network partners. We had an organization called the Sierra Leone Network. So we went down there and watched the film. Ambassador Andrew Young in 2004 or 2006 had done his DNA test, and it proved to have ancestry with the Mende people of Sierra Leone.
Oh.
That came to my mind as I watched that film or finished watching it. And the next 2 brothers I saw, they were working at the hotel. I think they were in maintenance. I said, "Hey, man, are you guys Gullahs?" They were disappointed. They were like, "No, man, them people down by the coast."
Right.
Okay. So to make a long story short, the next morning we were driving from Columbia. It's a 4-hour drive to the coast, Hilton Head Island. And there we met a man. A Gullah man, the first Gullah man I actually met, had been to Sierra Leone in 1989. Yes, they had gone for the first Gullah homecoming because in 1988, a president of my country came to visit the Gullahs based on these family relations alone. This has never happened in the Low Country.
Yeah.
Where an African president comes and visits with the Gullah Geechee people because he's connected to them or vice versa. So whilst he was there, he invited a group of Gullah leaders to go to Sierra Leone the next year in 1989.
Okay.
When I went down there in 2006, I didn't know any of this at all. You know, after that, I learned about there being some specific homecomings, and each is on a special, remarkable, I'm biased, BJ, as you can tell, remarkable stories about how African-Americans, not just Gullah Geechees, but African-Americans in their entirety are related to Africans.
Yes.
And these stories can be found. We're going to talk about them today. I'll tell you about them.
Yes.
And why, you know, there's a lot of fanfare around this today, but we have to move beyond that. What can we do now that we know we're relatives with Gullah Geechees? And it's not just Sierra Leone. There are other African countries. I mentioned Senegal, Gambia, Guinea. The more we do these types of things, talk about our narratives and connect or reconnect in a real way, I think we can change, you know, our black plight, our worldly black plight.
Yeah.
Because the more we know about, for example, America was built on our backs.
Right.
Its industry was the first successful industry in this country. And plantation owners, they didn't have the skills to cultivate rice. They tried and they failed miserably.
Right.
So once they knew the experts were in Africa, you know, they focused on us. And we built this country, I like to say.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's right.
Our people should know about that, our stories didn't just start here. Even when we were here, we did some remarkable things to put America on this trajectory that it sits on today.
Can you name some of the key cities in South Carolina that people would be surprised of the history that is in those cities? I told you about Plantersville. I know Georgetown.
Yeah, Georgetown was big, that area. I mean, that's where he had the richest aristocrats in the entire rice plantation economy, Georgetown area.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, all through the Low Country, there are some places that you probably don't have a big name, but
yeah.
It doesn't mean rice plantations were not there. When I drive around the Low Country, I've been from Florida, St. Augustine, Florida, all the way up to most recently, last weekend, I was in North Carolina, Cape Fear, for the first time.
Yeah.
because they also had a little bit of the Gullah Geechee-ness there, but they seem to have lost it, so to speak. However, my intervention hopefully will start us diving deeper into what happened there.
Yes.
Because there were Gullah Geechees there, and we need to find them and give them a rebirth, for want of a better way to put it.
So you coming down from Florida, you talk about the Black Seminoles, right?
And you that's a separate part. Well, yes, okay. That's a separate part of the Gullah Geechees.
So when people talk about the Florida Seminoles in football, they hide the identity of that Seminole.
That's right.
Were they Geechee?
Well, yes. They were Gullahs and Geechees. Wow. I mean, depending on where they came from. So what happened with those guys is that they ran away from plantations in South Carolina. Imagine going on foot from South Carolina to Florida.
Wow.
Yes.
Incredible.
And you're at risk, because if you get caught, man, the things they'll do to you. And sometimes these guys are moving with families, you know, old folks, young kids, just trying to escape. And, you know, if you can get away from all the different things that you can get caught up in and make it to Florida, you become a free man.
Wow.
So the same thing was happening to Seminoles, Indians. Actually, the term Seminole itself, it's a derivative of Cimarron, a Spanish word, which means a wild person or runaway or, yeah.
Okay.
So that's how Seminole evolved. So there was not really a Seminole tribe, but it was a term being referred to them as runaways.
Yes.
So the Indians were running away from Georgia for the most part, and the Africans were running away from rice plantations, enslaved in rice plantations in both South Carolina and Georgia. And then when they got there, they coexisted for years. And so Black Seminoles evolved out of that. Some of the stories about the Black Seminoles, for example, the Second Seminole War was a Black war. It wasn't a Seminole Indian war as people portray it.
Yeah.
And the reason why, because the U.S. Army, they faced the greatest resistance ever shown in this United States as we know them today from a slavery perspective. Because what the Black Seminoles did fighting alongside the Indians, they kept the entire U.S. Army at bay for 7 years, six to 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah. General Jessup, I don't remember his exact words, who was, you know, ahead of this arsenal of the U.S. Army trying to penetrate Florida, he wrote back to the White House trying to say that, oh, you all better believe this is not a Seminole war. This is a Negro war. And he was talking about, you know, what they were facing, because, you know, these Africans in the wilderness, guerrilla warfare tactics, and they weren't going to go back to death.
Right.
Because that's what it meant for them to get back into slavery. They're probably going to be killed in front of their families and all that kind. So they fought their tails off.
Wow.
Yeah, eventually they reached an agreement and they were moved to Oklahoma. Whilst in Oklahoma, these Black Seminoles, I call them the fighting Gullahs.
Wow.
Because they fought their way all throughout life, so to speak, or generations. In Oklahoma, they were being attacked this time by Indians, you know, and they would come and try to steal their women and children away to enslave them. So they fought them off. After a while, they got tired of that. They moved down to Nacimiento, Mexico. Mm. Same thing happened. They had to fight off Indians there twice. Texas Rangers went there twice to harass them. And both times, they sent those cavalry guys running back.
Wow.
I mean, the U.S. Rangers were so impressed with them, that they hired them to form a Black cavalry within the U.S. Army. And they were the Texas scouts, they were known as. And four of them had, you know, the highest medal of honor this country can give based on their fights, so to speak, protecting their families. But it is a remarkable story.
Yes.
And when that story gets known by Americans in general, it will change the way people look at history, at least from that perspective.
And that's some awesome history. I didn't know that. I didn't know how we got up to
it. I have a whole lot more to tell you, BJ. Hitting on the surface here.
Yeah, I know we're not going to be able to get everything, but we need to do a series of conversations about this, because how we migrated from place to place is amazing. And that history has been like hidden from us, right?
Yes. I was going to take you back to a place called Bond's Island in Sierra Leone. that operated from 1670 to 1807, so about 130, 40 years there, and exiling tens of thousands of Africans from the Sierra Leone region, my country, to the Americas. It happened for so long that our country, our people from our country, were able to influence the Gola culture in language, in names. You mentioned names earlier. Not all of us were stripped off of our names. I mean, you was, if you do the research, you will see names such as Kojo or Tamba. These are African names being referred to by plantation owners in letters they write to one another, calling these African names. But also, the Gullah Geechees, they used to have what you call basket names. So this would be a middle name. Hmm. So it will be, someone will be called Scott Amadou Parsons. But that Amadou, which is my first name, will be their middle name, but they will hide the name from others because of... Yeah, so they refer to them as basket names. Oh. I'm not sure if the Gullah Geechees still do that, but if not, we need to bring that back so we can have African names at birth.
Right.
And rightfully so.
I got to ask you this question about the religion, right, when the slaves came over, because I saw a special on PBS, and I saw one of the Gullah traditions where they were repeating the Al-Fatiha, which mm-hmm. is the opening chapter in the Holy Quran.
Yes, yes. In fact, there was a Gullah man. Well, he was African from Guinea, I believe. He was an Islamic scholar, and he was based on Sapelu Island. He represents the first illustrations of Islam in this country because they used to pray that Al-Fatiha. They would pray five times a day, and he became a trusted employee, so to speak. He was a driver. Now, the drivers are those Africans that would operate the plantations when the white folks were not there. Because during the course of the plantation season, 6 months of the year, it was the rainy season, a lot of mosquitoes were there. And these mosquitoes, I talked earlier about why there's a Gullah Geechee culture. It was due to these mosquitoes imparting tropical diseases on white folks, well, and black folks, but white folks would die more at a higher rate than black people would die. Mm. So once the white people knew this also, 6 months of the year, they would move away from the plantations, 30 miles inland up, because they're safe from the coast and the mosquitoes.
Yeah.
But what that did, it isolated those Africans, isolated them, and they were able to keep their practices, do many of the things that they brought from Africa. It stayed there.
Wow.
Now, let's contrast that with Virginia. In Virginia, I said earlier, there were more Africans taken to Virginia as enslaved people than to South Carolina. And the accidental importation of mosquitoes also happened in Virginia if they were coming from that Rice Coast area. But it was a little more colder in Virginia. Yeah. So the mosquitoes died during the wintertime.
Yeah.
In South Carolina and Georgia, that was not the case. So those mosquitoes just spread and spread and spread.
Yes.
Yeah. And I must tell you this very quickly. These same mosquitoes did the same for us in Africa. It made it impossible for the man, so to speak, to establish like they did in South Africa or Rhodesia or wherever. They were not able to stay in Africa because they would die due to the mosquitoes.
Right.
In Sierra Leone, we have such high honor of the mosquito. One of the awards we give to citizens for showing valor and, just being tough guys. They will get the order of the mosquito.
Wow.
Yes.
So tell me one thing that's major that we practice in African-American culture that we got from the Gullah Geechee culture. What is like something that black people do that they don't know what comes from that culture?
Well, one of them is eat rice. A lot of your diet, you have this thing called red rice in Gullah culture. In Africa, we refer to it as jollof rice. It has its origins in Senegal, but we also cook it in Sierra Leone. So that's one thing. The other thing, when you look at material culture, sweetgrass, I'm talking about things that are still here today. Sweetgrass baskets, it's another thing. Those baskets that, they charge a lot of money for, some of them, where what was taken from Africa. In fact, in 2019, we did a trip to Africa, and BJ, we got to take you too one of these days.
I got to go.
But we did a trip to Africa in 2019 where we took a sweetgrass basket maker, a seventh generation descendant basket maker, to the village in Africa, the only village in my country where they make these baskets. Now, these Africans had never seen anyone else outside of their community in our country do these baskets, let alone someone who came from abroad in a big bird, big iron bird, into Africa. Yeah. And she could do the same thing. I mean, it was just mind-blowing to them, too.
Wow. Let's talk about the Gullah Festival that's coming up. And I know that you attend all the time. And what could you tell us to make us say, man, this has got to be a destination this this spring for us to go and have this experience?
Right. I mean, a lot of things. First of all, the food.
Okay.
Gullah Geechee food every day. I mean, they have vendors all over the place selling Gullah Geechee dishes. Yeah. Many of them have their base in Africa. But also, you would learn about the Gullah Geechee. You see them. They look very, well, they look like you, BG. They're unique in their looks. I mean, when I first went down there, I was astonished about how these people looked like people that had left in my country 20 years ago.
Wow.
Features were so strong.
What were the features?
African features, dark, tall, big nose.
Yeah. Okay.
Those types of features.
Yes.
And you know, just the mannerisms. It was just a little, I mean, it was different from every other African Americans that I had met. And I had been living in the US for 20 years.
Yeah.
Before I actually physically saw these guys and observed how they behave.
So you could tell I'm a Geechee then by looking at my face. My facial structure.
Yes. Okay. I can tell you're a Geechee.
Okay. That's good. That's good. Can you explain this ancestral connection with us? And I know in the Gullah Geechee culture, they do reach out to the ancestors. Talk about that. Help us unravel and get the spookiness out of that.
Ancestral spirits.
Yeah.
They're around. It's part of the reason probably why I'm talking to you now.
Yes,
because
sir.
They've been guided by these spirits that we really can't explain. But Africans are big on ancestry.
Yeah.
I mean, big on ancestry.
Yeah.
So it is that same African, I want to say, commitment to believing and honoring our ancestors who had made paths before, whether they're good paths or bad paths, it doesn't matter to us. Our ancestors are our ancestors. And we feel these ancestral spirits. I see it more in the Caribbean because I do, you know, this type of work I do with the Gullah Geechees, I do with the Jamaicans, I do with the Trinidad and Trinbegonians, they call themselves these days. So my work, you know, is all about looking for Sierra Leoneans in the diaspora. And I hope other Africans, like from Nigeria, because Nigeria, they have big diaspora. I mean, many of the people were taken as enslaved Africans. And Ghana, Senegal, I want more of us. They have to find more guys like me who's crazy enough to be doing this kind of stuff because it has value.
Yes.
Particularly when I, you know, from an African country I come from, and I'm just fascinated about not just the history and culture, but I know there's more to it. I think the salvation for Black people is connecting back to Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
Or vice versa.
Yes.
This solve worldwide issues. So that's part of why I do what I do.
We need to reconnect with our people, man. That's, like you said, that's our salvation. So can you give me the dates of the Gullah Festival?
Yeah, it's Memorial Day weekend. And we'll be there. We'll probably take a bunch of Sierra Leoneans down to, you know, to be with you guys. And we can do some stuff. For example, when you're there, I can do for your group a talk about these connections.
Yes.
I think I'm going to be speaking there, but I can do a special one for your group. Talk about some of the things I'm talking about here, because that would add value to why you're there in the first place.
Okay, we're about to run out of time, but real quick, I know you're getting together a trip to Africa coming up.
Yeah.
And I know you can't really give any concrete details right now, but you are planning to go to Sierra Leone, right?
Yes, on December 27th, we plan to leave, and we'll be there for about eight days.
Wow.
And we're going to be doing the tour. Well, we call it a pilgrimage, huh? Because there have been things that have happened before us. I mean, homecomings. I'm not sure if I talked about the 10-year-old girl that was taken from Sierra Leone in 1756.
No.
There's one lady in South Carolina, Charleston, that knows she came from this 10-year-old girl that was taken from Sierra Leone in 1756 and sold in Charleston, South Carolina.
Mm.
She's alive.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
She's my friend, my sister.
Wow. That's incredible.
New stories. Yeah. Yeah.
So how can we contact you and see and experience more of your work online? What can you tell us?
Yes, I do have a website. It's called fanboutique.com. So F as in Francis, A Apple, M Mary, B Boy, U Umbrella, L Larry, T Tony, I N K Kate.com. And we also, that same name is on website. We have a Facebook page where we share information. But
we'll share those websites. Yeah, we'll share all those links in the description about the show and everything, so everybody will be able to get it, click it. But man, look, brother Amadou, thank you so much for sharing this valuable information. This is just the first of many conversations, because you got too much information and you got to get it all out. And that's what we're going to do leading up to the trip to go to Sierra Leone. I would like to join you. I know Sabrina does. My wife does.
Awesome.
I said, I'm going to Africa. I don't know how I'm going to get there, but I have to touch the soil. I believe I'm probably going to fall down on the ground and just probably weep for about 30 minutes.
Just some people have done that in the past. Not 30 minutes, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Wow. This is beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing this information, brother. Amadou Massali, CEO of Fanboutique, which means family tree. We talk about the Gullah Geechee culture. We're getting ready for the Gullah Festival that's coming up on Memorial Day weekend. We will be there and we will experience that whole atmosphere of our people being together, learn about our culture. With brother Amadou. Thank you so much again, brother.
Thank you, sir. The ancestors are calling you, BJ. Yes, let's sir. Do it.
Thank you.
The 20-Minute Morning Show is a podcast production of BJ Murphy Media and UIN, Urban Internet News. The show is written and produced by BJ Murphy and executive producers Sabre Robinson and Alexandria Davis. From our studios in Charlotte, North Carolina, our contributors are Sean, Sunday, AK, and Brooklyn Alexander. Check out more episodes on our website at 20minuteshow.com.